welcome to this week's Power Up. As you can tell from the title of this stream, we have a special guest this week. So Maud and I will be joined by a friend that I'm really excited to bring in. But first, Maud, how are you this week? What's going on?
I have chocolate all through my teeth and I'm not even sorry about it, guys. This is like my, you know how you get that 3:30-itis where you're just like, I need sugar? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just hit that one. But life's good. Loving the new Thursday time slot. This is the first week we are doing Thursdays. Mm-hmm. Why? So Trish and I get to maximize our weeks. Mainly me. I need a weekend, guys. Otherwise, I want to go crazy. So yes. Thank you so much for that. Loving everyone in the chat as well. Oh, wow. Everyone's being great. And I'm going to collect dragon scales.
Yeah, do it. Collect all the dragon scales so that you can do highlighted message like Ups and Downs 1892 just did. So thank you and welcome everybody for being here. This is just a reminder that although we do air these shows and these recordings live on Twitch, because they are ported over to podcast and eventually Geek Bomb's YouTube channel, all notifications are muted for the duration of the stream. But don't worry, I see you, and at the end of the recording, I will shout all of you out in all of your glory, because please know that I appreciate you all like Classy Librarian in the raid. Thank you so very much. All right, Maud, should we introduce our guest?
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to when I first met our guest. It would have been about 8. No, I haven't only been in the country for 7. So I'm guessing maybe 6 years ago. Either way, a very long time ago. You know him from his long tenure at Smosh Games. He's been doing amazing things. He's working on exciting projects. And he's grown probably the best moustache in quarantine that I've seen so far. Guys, give it up for Jovan Shire, who is our guest.
Thank you so much for having me here. Thank you for addressing the mustache. I thought I was really going to be a trendsetter. I was like, yes, you all grow your beards. I'm doing the mustache. And then, like, you know, every celebrity is, like, growing a mustache now. And I was like,
really?
I started this. I saw Matt Reeves at DC Fandom with his mustache. I was like, okay, it's a thing now.
It's a thing. It's a mustache thing. The only mustache I ever remember or person trying to make the mustache a thing was Joe Beretta. So I didn't know if maybe his mustache.
His is so glorious. But everything he does is glorious. So it's a hard way to compare myself there.
And up with quarantine, I noticed. Everything, he was
because Jovan, you got the opportunity to work with Joe back in the day when you were both working with Smosh. So I didn't know if maybe he had a small subliminal mustache left.
You know, I didn't even think about it till right now. But, you know, every day I strive to be a little bit more like Joe Beretta. So this makes sense. This lines up.
Totally. So, Jovan, how are you? How's quarantine?
You know, it's not bad. I can say that I'm now starting to have things kind of pick back up, which is good. These last 6 months have really given me a chance just to kind of, like, you know, break down the fourth wall again and connect with the fans and audience, which is the reason why YouTube became big in the first place. And it's very easy to get lost in, like, the projects that we want to accomplish, like, you know, our 5-year plans and everything. But to be able to, like, just slow down a little bit and, like, break the fourth wall, appreciate the fan base has been, you know, it's been great.
That's awesome.
Good reset. Yeah.
You know what? I've said something kind of similar to that, where it's like, it's really nice to spend some time at home alone and to self-reflect. But what it is like, we've actually had to sit with our feelings and like our problems and the things that we're really good at running away from. They're kind of just all here now. How has that been going for you?
What's funny is being in LA, you're so used to getting stuck in traffic, and traffic used to be my zen time. Like, there's this cartoon that I'm working on that one of my favorite ideas I've ever had came up because I was stuck in traffic, and I honestly miss those moments of quietness. And so I think in the last 6 months for, like, mental health, I've just taken more and more time to, like, break away for, like, an hour of the day where it's just, like, no screens, no technology. It sounds super hippie-ish because it is, but it just lets, like, you're not looking for your thoughts are finding you in that time. And that's kind of how I've, like, try to, like, balance that little bit of healthy mindset. So I'm not just going too crazy.
May I ask what you do to get in that zone?
Honestly, it's the first 10 minutes are the worst. I'll sit here in like this little nerd den and just kind of see where my mind wanders. But, like, you just so naturally pick up your phone. But if you just sit down, make sure the temperature's not too bad. I've got a porch. I've been hanging out there a little bit more. The wife has a green thumb, so I at least have nice things to look at. But it's, yeah, it's just a matter of like forcing it to happen. And once you can get past the first 10 minutes, I think that's where it really starts to like open up and you're just like, okay, I can do this. I can do this.
Okay. Yeah, I have the hardest problem with it. I can't do it. I don't know. Maude, can you? I wish that I could detach from technology, but even like before there were fires and all the smoke in the air, like even when we could go outside, I would go outside and play games on my phone. Or like read news on my phone or do something on my phone. Like it's so hard for me. My husband said to me one day, like, why don't you just like go lay on a chair in the back lawn and take a time out? And I was like, I don't even know how to do that.
It's not easy to do. And I was the like this big component of a proponent for being this type of person. It's like, no, technology isn't something to get in the way. It's like a part of us. It's a tool. Just get used to it and be accepting of this new future. And then one weekend, I just took the weekend. I just was like, I'm turning my phone off for the entire weekend. And after that, it's just been so much easier. You just have to force yourself to do it. And nobody likes to hear it. Nobody wants to take on this lifestyle of dropping their phone for an entire weekend. But it helps. I don't know.
I suck at it. I'll be very real with you, Jeff. I have set, you know, I think we all can relate to the fact where it's like, especially if you've got an iPhone, where it's like, oh, hey, is it Wednesday or Monday? Well, let me just tell you how long you've been on the phone on average. Oh, you're hitting 11 hours a day. Like, don't worry, you're 22% down from last week. And you're just like, the shame just kind of ripples all over you. And you're like, that is so long to be on a phone. And I have alerts where it's like, hey, you've been on this app for an hour today. Like, we're going to cut you off. Like, I have that. but I was talking to you guys off camera about watching Social Dilemma. And I think I might go into it in depth next week. But a really, really good documentary that I think is mandatory viewing for everyone.
It is. It is. It's if you're going to utilize the tools of technology like we do on a day to day, you just have to see the other side of it. You do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Jovan, what are you working on now? Where can people find you right now?
Well, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, it's all at the Jovanshire. That is, you know, I've kind of just made myself a person of social media. I've kind of slowed down from YouTube, but if there are any other new fans of mine that have not seen a lot of the content I've created, I like doing mini runs of shows. So like we did a D&D run with crossover with Lasercorn, if you remember him from Smosh Games as well. Other than that, like moving to Instagram just to kind of give like minute long videos of like information has just made me a lot more happier. And we are unfortunately at this time where I'm working on something very, 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 very big. I can't say what it is yet.
Okay.
But it is a dream come true. It is the largest thing I've ever worked on in my entire career. And it should be released this year.
How long is this making? Is this a couple of years in the making?
Yes. The pitch process started. Yeah. 2 years ago, I think. And it just takes like a lot of people in our industry. I think the next, step in their career normally is like, all right, cool. YouTube was fun. I want to pitch and create shows now, which is definitely the thing that I did. But they don't tell you how long it takes. It took Seth Rogen 10 years to sell, Preacher, which is an amazing show, and shouldn't have taken him 10 years to sell one show, but it's kind of that process. Mm-hmm. But you know, I had a cartoon on Arcade Cloud that was fun. We have 2 episodes up currently of Worst Ways to Die, which, you know, as for 2020, just felt like it was part of the theme. But you know, it's the worst ways to die in specific video games. We did Minecraft and Final Fantasy VII. But there's a lot more to come.
That's exciting.
You've pivoted into doing a lot of voiceover stuff as well. And I kind of love that you are very business minded in the fact that you want to be like kind of in charge of all things content based. And I also know that I'm kind of blending 2 questions together, but I'm sorry about that. I want to talk about that side of things, but also you're a massive Batman fan and I want to hear about your new thoughts on Batman. So just talk for 5 minutes and answer all of that.
I can do that. First of all, the professional side, thank you for acknowledging that. It's, I think, really scary for a lot of us in our industry because there is no path that's set in stone. It's just like, all right, cool, I did this. Now, well, what am I going to do next? Like, there's no one before us that did this. So finding those next steps, it's all about just finding out what you're passionate about, finding the little things that you actually have talents for. And it's like, all right, let's utilize that. And there's a lot of people that will go like, all right, I want to own everything that I do. And I'm like, nah, I'll make you stuff. This is yours. I can just make it and it works really well. And that's like the business mentality that I've kind of had moving forward, and it's opening doors for me. So just there's always different ways to approach a business. And as for the Batman, oh my God, how about the Batman? Yes, I'm a little biased, but it just everything that I'm seeing from it, maybe I'm even too positive about it. If you were to tell me there was any other superhero movie that was acknowledging so many different villains, I would be like, well, we've seen this done before and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I think it's gonna work with the Batman. Give me Colin Farrell as the Penguin for like 2 minutes in a movie. I think that's gonna be one of maybe the best 2 minutes of that movie, if that's the case. Paul Dano as the Riddler, as probably the best version of the Riddler we've ever had.
Ooh,
I don't know.
Wait, hold up a second. That is a hot take.
Schumacher asked, I said it right. It just sounded weird because I've never said that before. But I love Jim Carrey as Riddler.
I think you and I could go punch for punch on being like the biggest Jim Carrey fan. He is a phenomenal actor, and what he did with the Riddler, I think, was very akin to what they were doing with some of the Batman villains in 1966, and it really does hold a place in Batman history as a great Riddler. But what we're seeing, I think, with this Paul Dano Riddler is what Heath Ledger did with the Joker.
Yeah.
We're just seeing a different side of what this actual character would look like in a messed up world.
Less comic book fun villain.
Yeah, we are seeing a serial killer movie, and Batman is in that. And that's a little exciting.
They were like, you know, we've done camp, it bombed. Marvel's doing fun, glossy, a little bit funny, but like still saves the day heroic. And so they went full blown dark.
Yeah, and DC's really living in that world right now, and doesn't always play out for them. But I just think that they've embraced the multiverse idea, and you know, this is a standalone Batman movie. And honestly, if they even wanted to say that in this Batman universe, this is what leads to like the BVS Batman that we know, I could see it happening. And anyone that thinks that Robert Pattinson isn't going to make a great Batman is silly. You're just silly. You're silly.
Tell him.
And also, as big of a Batman fan as I am, I'm the first one to say that he's like the easiest superhero to portray. Bruce Wayne as an actor choice is not hard to hit that level. Being Batman, yes, you want to get the right mindset. I never want to downplay what an actor can do. But I think playing the complexity of a character like Iron Man is more so than the character that just, you know, wears two different masks, one physical and one non-physical. And I just think for like the actor's workshop, it's not that hard to pull off a Batman. So you just have to look at different things that an actor can do. And our boy Bobby Pattinson, he's got some brood. So
I mean, Brood is what he does. He made a name on Brood.
He did. And I don't know. I think in that trailer, when he just goes all out and just starts punching, I think that long shot, no cut, no punching, just him beating up someone, that was like the director saying, you wanted Batman? You didn't think he could do it? There you go.
Yeah. Okay. I'm still stuck on Cedric Diggory. And I feel like if I could make the analogy that Robert Pattinson has, Cedric Diggory definitely died, but now he's taking up like the Tom Riddle mantle of like that emo chip on shoulder kind of thing that's happening.
So what you're saying is we need to reboot Harry Potter, recast it a little bit, and you know, our Cedric now becomes our Tom Riddle.
There it is. That's a level.
I mean, that could be a thing.
When was the last time you all watched the Twilight movies? And I'm guessing it's not for a while, because that's something that this sad person did last year when she had the flu for 2 weeks. Robert Pattinson, over four or whatever movies, looked like he had 9 marbles in his mouth and he was trying not to breathe. That's all I saw the whole time.
And I think that's what a lot of people still see. Because, you know, branding is everything in our career. And, you know, he got branded with that. Unlike Anna Kendrick, can just tweet out, it's like, oh my God, guys, I was in Twilight, and people literally had forgotten.
got, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because didn't she get Academy nominated for supporting actress in Up in the Air?
Yes.
That's how you shed that. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that'll do it. So, you know, when our boy Batman here gets an Oscar nod this year, that'd be fine. Or next year.
One last question, though. Like, you were saying that, you know, I don't want to undermine actors. You are an actor. You are a voice actor, and you have voiced a lot of things. But my favorite is in Smite.
Yes. that was a very fun thing to do. And it's a route that I took really seriously, because I think sometimes, like, especially being as an influencer, as like my day job, I didn't want people thinking like, oh, okay, he tweeted and got in. So I actually, I went, and I've been doing like voiceover classes. Debbie Derry Berry was my voice coach, who's the voice of Jimmy Neutron. And so we went into it, we had a good time with it. And you know, the combination, especially for that character, was, I don't know, just giving it way more depth than it probably needed. So that particular Loki kind of lives in this place where it's a little bit. Do you guys remember? From Labyrinth. The guy that was Hoggle. Yeah, it's a little Hoggle meets a little bit of Joker, and that's where the Leprechaun voice kind of started to live.
I loved that. I thought it was so great. You're supposed to be mischievous. You're supposed to be like, you know, exactly.
It's if that. Loki was a Leprechaun and kind of live in that world. But then I got to do more voice acting for the cartoon on Arcade Cloud, which was nice. And it's something that I'm glad that I have the tools for now to accomplish more of. But I think I just, like, now that I'm like directing more, it's so much more fun actually, like, to have like Lasercorn in the booth or something. I'm like, no, emphasize the word the for like two beats and take us to that place. And then just like see a character kind of like, develop in front of you, and like they didn't even know that's what the character was going to look like. So a little bit of both.
That's super fun. So do you want to do more kind of directing, producing, moving forward? Like where do you see yourself going from here?
Yeah, I definitely see myself doing a lot more work behind the camera. I think that's just, like I said earlier, I think my talents are starting to open up there. When I was doing 7 years of Smosh Games, yes, on camera as one of the main hosts, but I was behind the scenes. Like, we were creating shows, we were creating concepts that, and then running post-production also, and seeing an actual narrative behind something that doesn't seem like it's supposed to have a narrative. Like, everyone loved our Grand Theft Smosh shows, which was our show based around Grand Theft Online, and just playing as ourselves in there, it just looked like it was just random chaos every single episode with a few jokes. But knowing, like, the writer's room meeting beforehand, it's like, all right, here's our first act, here's our second act, we're gonna see if we can get it to a third act, but the fact that it doesn't work, that's our button to end on. And I think I just found so much pleasure in like the problem solving of it all. And that's all directing is. Show running and directing is less making the product that you want to make and more just solving 90 different problems that come up like the day of, and you're like, no, we can still make this work if we do this, and if we switch this schedule around, and now we have this person here, and we put this on camera. Okay, problem solved.
Something that I really admire, and it's worth bringing up because Trisha and I are doing a show because we're both alumni from SourceFed, but that camaraderie that you get when you work that often and that long beside the same people. Mm-hmm. But even though you left Smosh Games like a few years ago and everyone else has kind of since moved on, you still have such a beautiful friendship that is continuing to sort of like blossom. The fact that you still work with Mari and chat with her all the time as well, mm-hmm. who's also been on the show. What was that? What's that like? Because that's something, is that probably like the best thing that you got out of 7 years of
It's the luckiest thing for sure. And like, you hear it every time a star is like on a TV show. It's like, this was the best cast ever. We're really like a family and I love it. And it happens. I saw my castmates more times than I saw my actual family. And that's normally the case with any job, 8 hours a day somewhere. You're gonna see them more than your extended family. But we weren't just, you know, working together, seeing each other every day. Like, we were stuck in a cramped room, and so Hinky and myself, we still joke about how, like, we had arguments. Like, we would yell at each other because we're stuck in a room. I've got an opinion, he's got an opinion. But then, you know, you just barrel through it, you get to the other side, and you're like, okay, I know, I get it, that was fine, that's fine, yeah, whatever. And that just builds a strong relationship. And then outside of that, you get to know each other's cadence and patterns and jokes, so you can start to set each other up for jokes, then they can slam dunk, and it just makes for a fun relationship. And the fact that we have been able to take that past what we did there to still be friends, like off camera, and just be super supportive of each other, like online, is lucky. It's great. I definitely miss that rock star part of my life. Like, I know it'll probably never be like that ever again, because it was such a unique situation. But I love that you guys made the comparison to SourceFed, because through the thick of it and even afterwards, I always saw you guys as like that comparison of like when you had like this ensemble cast that was really breaking down the fourth wall to be more like friends first, content second. Mm-hmm. I saw that between SourceFed and Smosh Games. And when we started to break out to do our own stuff, I was looking at what you guys had broken out to do your own stuff as like a little guidance. It's like, all right, well, what does come next for something like this?
That is the most flattering thing ever, I think. because I feel like Smosh Games was so like envelope pushing in so many different ways. And yeah, I mean, it's, of course, we worked our buns off and experienced a lot of the same stuff you're talking about, where it's like we're all in a tiny room and, you know, mm-hmm. you barrel through the screaming at each other to make content because that's what you do every day. And you see these people more than your family. But at the end of the day, it's hard for me to not look back at those years and think like, we were just messing around and yeah. like what we kind of figured
no
out
one's gonna
happened
give me money
to
make any of the stuff that I did. We got lucky.
Well, I mean, I was running a channel. Everyone else was messing around.
There you go. I could see that, obviously.
I was captaining that ship.
Well, Maud's tenure at SourceFed was a different time than mine. So I didn't see a lot. Maud and I have different experiences there that we talk about sometimes. When Maud was at SourceFed was when I started working in the same office building as Joven.
Yeah, wow. That's right. Yeah, that's when I started seeing you a little bit more often, which was very nice.
Defying odds.
And Maud, how do you feel to kind of flip the script here? Like when you were taking over, like for like people that were there before you, you want to keep the same soul because that's why people watch the YouTube channel. How did you feel like the difference was there, like now starting like a new language, but I don't know, like it had a new vibe. It was just a different vibe. Did you feel like there were challenges there, or did you want to like keep specific things alive?
Stepping into the shoes. Well, I was technically stepping into Trisha's shoes.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to be like that. I was supposed to replace Lee, but they realized that I was more of a geek than any of the geeks on.
and to this day, still are.
It's a little bit like a kind of thing. I had heard of SourceFed, and I think I watched a little bit before I went into the audition, but I didn't really know SourceFed. My biggest challenge was learning about digital media because I came from a traditional media background. Mm-hmm. I just finished 2 years doing a radio show that was all about red carpets and movie junkets. And so covering sort of like that angle mixed with music. So the biggest challenge for me was going back into 5 days a week, which is not suitable for my personality type. Even though 2 days were the same. So that was nice. It was very on your toes. But I had to learn about, the best way to describe it is in traditional media, you are paid a lot of money to do one job only. But in digital media, you are paid very little to do every job.
Everything else. All the hats, as they say.
My God, I remember, like, you know, when we're talking salary, they offered less than half, like almost pretty much a third of what I was on. And like, yay! And I was like, are you kidding?
It's a job on the internet. It exists.
And then, like, cut to, I designed a new set. And then on Saturday, like, on my weekend, I was painting the set. And I was like, in what world am I doing this?
Tom Sawyer'd you. It's like, it'll be fun.
Yeah, go on. It's your thing. You have to do it now. So I'm like, so I'm a set designer. I'm a producer. Mm-hmm. And it's like these things. And you're like, I guess I just do it all. And
yeah, that's my first day in. It was, I had auditioned and then they called and said, can you come in for a screen test? So I show up like hair and makeup ready for my screen test. And they were like, did you bring a laptop? And I said no, and they said, well, you need to research and write a story for yourself. I guess you can do that on your phone. I was like, I what?
Start texting. Well, just like one person, like an entire story paragraph at a time.
I'm like, yeah, here I am. I'm like, I don't have a journalism background, or like, I mean, I've never really written scripts before. I thought I was here for a hosting screen test, but Yeah, no, cool. I'll figure it out.
Reset instantly.
Instantly. So I wrote a story and put Elliot in it, who I was just meeting for the first time that day and was supposed to write in his voice. And then we went and filmed the thing, and they were like, if we like it, we'll put it up. And I was like, oh, because again, I thought I was there for a screen test. And then they were like, so we're going to put it up. What's your Twitter handle? And I said, I don't have one. And they were like, you're going to make one right now. What's your Twitter handle? And I was like, wow. Okay. So it was like, you're in it now. And crazy. Just very different expectations.
As annoying as those experiences can be, like, in hindsight, man, those really sculpted us to be able to, like, jump into any meeting now and, like, understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, knowing what kind of lighting you need versus, like I can tell when working with a host if they have an understanding of how post-production works. If they mess up a line and pick up from the same spot, I immediately feel bad for the editor. It's like, all right, does this person pick up from their last sentence, giving themselves the same cadence they had before to then continue with the sentence?
They run through on the same sentence without a beat, without an edit spot. Yeah.
So it's just like you learn these things through all the different hats that we've worn, and it just makes, you know, it makes us better at what we do, and we'll take that as a positive now.
Yay!
So to all those watching, learn everything. Understand everything else.
Do all of it.
Let's kick off Power. Let's chat about what you are currently playing, watching, and reading.
Before we do that, I think we have to do Bombs Away Q&A, yes? Okay. Never mind. Mod's like, we're running the show.
There was one in the Bombs Away Q&A. Jimmy. I'm in the wrong spot. My bad. I think it's obviously that something that is... got history behind it, which I'm not aware of, but ask Jovenshire how he feels about Emma Watson and her acting ability.
If there was one thing I could delete from the internet.
I don't know the backstory of this.
Oh, great. I get to inform everyone. Fun. So being a part of Smosh for so many years, they like to do pranks. We would do pranks on each other all the time. Some of them actually made it to camera. One of them, it was literally the biggest thing that I think I've ever, like, it has the most views. It's at 30 million views, maybe, Emma Watson prank. I was told I was going to a junket, during the Noah interviews, and I was going to be talking to Logan Lerman, and I was ready. Because I thought we were going to just be messing with him a little bit. I was going to ask him a bunch of, like, what's it like to work with Emma Watson questions. Because how do you not love what she creates as an artist? So I was ready for it. I was going in as a super fan of Emma Watson's. And I was going to give Logan Lerman a hard time. Little did I know that I had Anthony there with me and Ian in his ear. Just trying to get me to ask the most embarrassing questions of all time. And then in walks in Emma Watson instead of Logan Lerman. But and you could see in my eyes that I try to be a professional so, so badly. Because, like, if someone gives you Emma Watson to do an interview for a video, you don't say no. Like, oh, no, I'm sorry. We bring in Logan Lerman first. No, you just go with it. You yes and you have a good time with it. So I go through all my embarrassing questions and I look. I'm like, there's one on there that kind of works. And so I, like, fix it, and I ask the question, and then Anthony's like, ask the other question. And then it's just like 30 minutes of the most embarrassing stuff in the room with her. I had to read these questions, and it's now burned in my memory. It's like, in the movie Noah, the ark is surrounded by water, the chances that you would go out on a date with me. And so they were just like wordplay to ask her out. She said yes, mind you. She did say yes to one of them. So, you know, persistency is key, I guess. But yeah, it's just there was a rap also that I had to do on the spot. It's just the most cringeworthy, embarrassing video of myself on the internet. And I've done some very embarrassing stuff, but this is the most embarrassing. And it pops up on Reddit once a year also. So I'll have, like, friends from high school, like, pinging me on Facebook, like, is this you? I'm like, yeah.
My interviews show up on / cringe all the time. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be.
It's my level of comedy. I think if you wind up on cringe, it's great.
Yeah. Good. Terry is asking if you have any plans on a second season of both your D&D campaigns.
Yes. Yes. I think to best answer that question, I will say that if you pay attention to Lasercorn's channel, he's actually introducing the continuing a story with those characters. So we will be bringing a lot of that back to the platform. But I am not done with D&D yet. And I think there's some big stuff to come in the future.
I like that. This is a really cool question that I like from STS, and I wonder if we talk about it in Power Down. How has being an internet influencer changed from when you first started?
Well, geez, wow. Let's reflect on that a little bit, because it's drastically different. I think in a nutshell, my answer is I don't want to be an influencer anymore because it's not the same thing. I also dislike the name influencer. I think that is the word. It's a word that was used behind the scenes for Hollywood companies to kind of decipher what the difference is between someone on YouTube versus someone on the big screen. When they had people at a party, they didn't want to say, oh, we've got a bunch of celebrities here. They want to be like, oh, we've got our celebrities here, and we also have influencers here. And so it's a name that really stuck. I think it's a dirty word, because now it's like, you're paying me to influence you. That's not what I do. Yes, I do brand deals and stuff that I believe in, because it's something that I've worked with, or it's a product that I like. An influencer is someone who makes a commercial, like on TV. Someone that does a Nissan commercial is an influencer. They're using the right angles to influence your mind to be like, ooh, this car is sexy. I'll be sexy if I drive this car. And that's not how it started. Like when I got in this field in 2008, that really wasn't a thing until like 2010 to 2012, when like people were really getting these brand deals. And it was more of an understanding. It was like, hey, use your expertise on this topic to then, you know, promote this product because it is in line to your voice. Now the quote unquote influencer is such a dirty word, because it's just turned into people online asking other people for free stuff. There's a convention that I go to in Southern California called Frankincense. For anyone that knows it, hey, shout out. But I was there buying some Magic the Gathering cards. And while I was buying from someone, someone tapped me on the shoulder and asked me for a photo. So it was cool. I did that. Then I went back to doing my purchase. My buddy afterwards was like, yeah, while you were taking that photo, the guy at the table was like, should I know who this guy is? And he's like, oh, yeah, he does these YouTube videos. And then the owner was like, oh, he's an influencer? Ah, never mind. And immediately it just became this dirty word. And that's the big difference. Being an influencer is a dirty word now.
I'd love to talk more about that afterwards, because I've got a lot of thoughts as well.
100%.
Being a role model, because influencers are not. But we will go into that. You gave me a great segue talking about Magic the Gathering. So let's chat about your power, what you are currently playing at the moment.
Oh, how I said yes to doing a live show today. I don't know how you got me to do it. The new Magic the Gathering set is out as of today on Magic the Gathering Arena. That is, yes, what I am playing a lot of. We are now looking at, where are we? We're in Ravnica. No, I'm sorry. Zendikar Rising is the new set. So I've been playing Magic since 1995. Arena has definitely sucked me back in. So seeing all the new cards, for the nerds that get the lingo, we are now in rotation. So it's a very exciting time, because all the old cards have rotated out. Now we're looking at new cards so the meta changes, the decks change, the lore is fun. I'm all about it.
I played it once in 2014 when I realized I lived near some other sort of nerds walking distance, actually, which was really great. And she would put on Magic the Gathering evenings. And I was like, oh, man, I used to like kid. Like my brother had all the cards. We played a lot. And so I went over there and I was like, oh, I haven't played in like 15 years. Be gentle. This person with the black deck fucked me up so hard.
We always remember that time that went very wrong.
Yeah.
She was mean. And I was like, I can't really remember how to play. And she's like, that's okay. I just resurrect 7 people in all of my deck and then all of your deck and you're already dead. So it's fine. And I'm like,
cool. Cool.
Great. Although the one thing I really miss about playing with physical cards, and actually Lasercorn did a MTG draft night that Ivan and I went to. We were trying to figure out how you can still get together and play Magic in person with children. So Lasercorn had his sitter come over to watch all three of our kids while we played Magic cards at his house. And we did this like whole draft night. It was amazing. But one of the things I really miss about playing in person is I feel like my friends all spend about the same amount of money on Magic cards. So it doesn't feel as pay to win as when I play Arena online. I don't know if that's something you butt up against too, Jovan, but I feel like sometimes I just get up against a deck that I'm like, dude, your cards are so OP. Why are we even playing?
Yeah, I have a really good friend of mine that's strictly free to play, and I will spend money on Magic the Gathering Arena every set, which is still less money than I was spending on physical cards. And I think that's where the big win for me is. Like, if you are trying to stay up to date, it's costing you $200 to $400 every 3 months to play with physical cards. Whereas on Arena, I'll drop $50 and be good for 3 months. That's fine. But yes, it is pay to win, though we have proven that free to play does work in the franchise. You just have to think outside of the box. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle game at the end of the day. So if someone's spending like all their time and all their money to play the game, you can work other cards in that you know is a hard counter. You just have to figure it out.
Oh, 100%. And I do not, for the record, I never spent $200 to $400 on my physical card collection. I would maybe spend $100 a year. Maybe on my physical card collection. But everyone I knew also spent about that same amount of money. So we were all on a pretty equal playing field.
That's nice. That's what I was talking about. I definitely didn't have an addiction problem where me, Lasercorn, and Sohinky would leave our Smosh Games office to go take a 2-hour lunch to go buy new cards and come back and play for another hour. That never happened.
Not at all.
But yeah, Arena's been just a really smart move for the franchise. And I hope we see other card games kind of go in that direction. I think there's some really strong card games from the 90s that might see a resurrection because the model works.
Do you play other card games?
Do I play what?
Do you play other card games?
No, because because I have such an addictive personality, easily distracted. If I try to work in too many games at the same time, I won't get my work done. So right now I'm allowed 2 games at any point in time. So it's Magic the Gathering and Avengers right now. We'll go back to, we'll throw Smite back into the mix afterwards, but 2 games at a time and that's it.
So here's a question for you, Jovan. I was actually streaming Arena yesterday as a random, like, oh, I've got some downtime. I want to fit in a game real quick. What should I play? Let me fire up Arena. It's been so long. because I don't stream it that often, I had people in chat asking, like, what is this? What is Magic? What kind of game is it? And so I tried to give a very succinct description, but I would love to hear yours. If you had to, like, describe what Magic was to someone who's never heard of it, how would you pitch it?
It is the most complicated tabletop game in existence, but once you understand how it works, you can kind of figure out how to play.
I would just be like, 2 words, tap mana.
And then let someone else take all the creatures out of the graveyard and finish the game.
Well, it's so funny. I remember one of the first ever videos that I made for SourceFed Nerd when we were still completely in development and nothing was going up yet. Was a Magic the Gathering 101, like a step-by-step intro to how to play this game. And I don't think it ever hit the light of day. What's up, Mon?
I did it for Overwatch.
Yeah, I don't think that it ever... I know, because years later, Sam was like, oh, we're starting this new show called 101. I was like, yeah, we totally pitched that like 4 years ago, and I don't think approved it. But cool that you can make it now.
I'm glad you're going that way. A lot of my fan base, when I stream, at least, it's really just there to like talk or hang out. And probably 75% of them don't play Magic, and teaching them doesn't work. And it's not because the game is just so complicated. Like there's a lot to it. There's ways to learn the game step by step easily if you just download like the free game or something. But anytime I streamed Magic the Gathering, it was literally just like, all right, if I'm not doing something on screen, I'm just here talking to you guys in chat. And so it was finding a different balance.
It's so weird, card games, because I remember My dog.
That sounded like a person screaming. That was your. That was Zelda.
Excuse me, Zelda. That was so rude.
I went into puppy instincts because I have my three dogs downstairs right now, and like, yeah, one's small, one's medium, one's giant. So anytime I hear a dog bark, I'm ready. I think it's like my dogs. I'm like, well, okay, I can fix this.
What I was trying to say was I hosted a tournament for Gwent. Now, Gwent is in Witcher, and I played a butt ton of Witcher, and I played a lot of Gwent in it, and I collected all the cards, and I had a massive grasp on the whole thing. So when they're like, do you know Gwent? I was like, yeah, I'm pretty good at it, actually. For a professional tournament, and I was like, I have no idea what they're doing. I have zero understanding.
I've merely scratched the surface of this game, apparently.
Were we even playing the same game this whole time? Like, way. But yeah, I understand. Unless you're in deep,
yeah,
it's just, you can't be a surface level kind of voyeur on it.
And that's the difference between like any esports and liking a game. Like, there's a lot of games I think that I'm good at. And then I'll see someone play professionally, and I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, that's how I feel. That's how I feel when you go to BlizzCon and you see the Hearthstone tournaments that are going on up on the big screen. I'm like, I don't even know. What was that combo they even just did? I don't even know what that was.
That card's in the set?
Yeah, yeah. And all of a sudden someone's winning and like, and they're, it's over. And you're like, the fuck?
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. But I love that you have been loving that through pandemic. And if people have never played Magic, would you suggest that they start now, being how you said it's such a complicated game?
Yeah, and it's actually, I'm so glad we're having this conversation today of all days, because rotation did just happen. So now is the best time to start, because that means the cards that are available today will be available for the next year. So anything you purchase, you actually have a lot of longevity with. During the fall is always the best time to start playing the Magic the Gathering, and that's right now. So, you know, if you want to learn the game and play the most complicated, amazing game that's been around for 30 years, give it a go.
Yay! As Jovan mentioned, it is free to play.
Yeah, it is. It 100% is. And it's free to download, and they'll teach you how to play the game right there, and you don't have to worry about, like, playing against other people to learn how to play the game, which is helpful.
That's good. Yeah, because you get your ass. That's what happened with Smite and me. I thought I was going to be really good at it. In my first couple of levels, I was fine. But then I just absolutely got so owned by everyone else. It was just...
You jump online and you're like, this isn't the game I was playing.
Yeah. Like, this isn't fun. But yeah, I loved all the voice work in it. Like, I thought that was
quite... They have a really strong writing team, from the mythos of the characters that influences the kit of the characters all the way to like the writing of the characters themselves, there's a line that Loki Charm says when you defeat the fire giant, and he's like, the old man made me do it. And that's, you rarely hear that line, but it is such in like Leprechaun lore that there's like the old man that sent the Leprechaun away, that it's like such a deep cut line that someone will get the reference. It's like, okay.
I love mythos. I love mythology. I love lore. I love all that kind of stuff. So to see it kind of played out so extreme in this game, that was my favorite part of it. I really liked that. Should we move on to watching?
Yes, Jovan, tell us what you are watching.
What am I watching? I believe I told you. Oh, it's there on screen. Oh, it's Cobra Kai. That's what I'm watching. Oh, my God, guys. Can we talk about Cobra Kai? I immediately was thinking The Boys because I got new episodes coming out on Friday, so I'm very excited for that. But hands down, if you aren't watching Cobra Kai, you should be. It's on Netflix now. This show started off as a YouTube original, so 40 people saw it. and then, you know, it did season 2. But now it's all officially on Netflix, and the big hype is that we will be getting season 3 in 2021. And it's just, like, I don't know. I don't want to be mean to the franchise, but, like, I didn't have high hopes for anything that started on YouTube original. As a YouTube creator, I wouldn't expect to have anything like high hopes. But the writing behind it and the directing behind it and the storytelling is so layered and so good. Like, without giving anything away, there's many episodes where you're like, who am I rooting for? Who's the good guy? Because like, if you watch the pilot episode, it's definitely posed as like, here's Billy Zabka again, reprising his role. And then, you know, here's Ralph Macchio reprising his role. So the feud from 1984, I believe. But in that, Ralph Macchio was the good guy in Cobra Kai, based on the title, kind of poses Billy Zabka as the protagonist. But then as the story goes, as writers, they did a very smart thing, and they allowed their characters to grow and the story to honestly evolve past the narrative that they set out to create. And by doing that, you have these episodes where it's like, oh, no, he's the good guy. No, he's the good guy. No, I want him to, oh, this is good. Oh, this is good. And then there's also like a high school drama aspect to it, which normally will turn me off to a TV show. But in two cases, I've been all about the high school drama. This show and Daybreakers was another one that I had a fun time watching.
The guy D&D with is in that show.
Really? It's great. But yeah, with Cobra Kai, two seasons are out. Season three is it's unfortunately, it has the biggest cliffhanger that I've seen in television in a while, and that's counting Breaking Bad stuff. And again, by no means should Cobra Kai have a cliffhanger season ending that's as big as Breaking Bad, but it is.
Okay, so what I've noticed about this show, which I am so thrilled about, is that every time I've heard someone talk about it, it is with such enthusiasm and dedication and admiration that I'm just like, I'm so into it. But like, I was at a, this was when we were not in a plague, a dinner party, and two men in their 40s would not come up for air. They were like, and I was like, what are you guys talking about? They're like, oh, Cobra Kai. And I was like, the Karate Kid thing? They're like, oh, no, it's not just, and they were just
like, yeah.
And then I also see this meme that's come out that's going all over Twitter, and it's like, baby boomers going out and getting COVID. Generation X staying in and watching Cobra Kai. Generation Y, Gen Z, staying in and, I mean, going out and getting, so everyone's going out and getting COVID except Gen X because of that correlation.
You're watching the Cobra Kai. Yeah, it's...
Yeah.
And when the show was just available to watch on YouTube Plus or Premium, whatever, Red, I think it was called, like those conversations were happening. And if you could find someone that had seen it, you were talking about it for like 2 hours. And so now, yes, it's more readily available, which is fantastic, but still not a lot of people that I know have seen it. So I keep like trying to like coax people to go watch it. But here we are on Power Up saying, this is a show you need to watch. I binged it in 4 days. Two seasons, 20 episodes. Yes, I haven't done that since. It's been a long time since I've dedicated that much time to television.
So, Maude, I have to ask, have you seen Cobra Kai at all? Was this on your radar? Did you know about it in the YouTube Red days or anything like that? Because I didn't even know it was a YouTube Originals. Like, you're dropping that bomb on me right now. I just knew it was a Karate Kid show on Netflix that I hadn't seen.
Oh, it was, yeah, people were talking about it big time. People were getting subscriptions for YouTube Red just solely for the show and not being disappointed by it. They had a billboard on Sunset Boulevard in LA when it first came out because they were like pushing for it so hard. It makes me a little bit worried about YouTube and what their future is looking like. A, because we all are unanimously like, fuck YouTube. But also if they're selling their tentpole program to Netflix, it's like, I wonder what's going to happen with Red. But the fact that it's got more of a public access to it, and it's on the homepage. Like if you open up Netflix, it pops up and all auto plays kind of thing. So they're now jumping on that. I think it's probably going to be the next show that I watch.
Ooh. I was going to say, have you started it yet? You haven't started it yet?
I've seen the first like 90 seconds, which kind of takes you at the back of, because it auto played. And I was like, oh, but then I watched Social Dilemma. It's like, don't let anyone autoplay. And I'm like, but yeah, it picks up from 1984's Karate Kid. But I remember watching Karate Kid when I was a kid because I had brothers. Everything was wax on, wax off, you know? Mm-hmm. Like I was Leonardo.
And not to scare away any fan or any new fans of the franchise, I had forgotten a lot about Karate Kid, and they will remind you and they'll give you a flashback when there's something that you need to remember from the original. So don't feel like you need to pick up 1984's Karate Kid to rewatch it. Don't do it because, hey, go Reseda. It's great to watch.
Yay. I love that recommendation.
STS brought up the Jackie Chan, Jaden Smith reboot. Does anyone remember that?
I liked it. I liked it. Jackie Chan beats up a bunch of kids in that movie, and that had me sold. And then I watched the rest of it, and I was happy with it.
Okay.
No. I like Jackie Chan at all. I had a really funny interview with him for Lego Ninjago. Mm-hmm. And it was like him teamed up with Dave Franco, which was so weird because Jackie Chan 6 minutes. And I managed to get out of it. He had a scene with like a kid, and I think there was like a dog or a cat in it. And I was like, dude, they say to never work with kids and pets. And look at you. All you did in this movie was work with kids and pets. And he's like, and he went on this massive rant about how unprofessional and inept the kid was. And it was so weird. One thing that he was supposed to do. And he was like, I didn't want to work with the kid, but I have to work with this kid. And I was just like, I love you, Jackie Chan. And Dave Franco is like laughing hysterically as well. It was
that's really a combo. That's a combo.
Oh, that's a combo. Nice.
Awesome. I will probably also be watching this as my next show then too, because I was looking for something new. Because yes, The Boys is only releasing one week at a time. I
need something to fill the hours.
You can't give me three and let me binge and then release it episodically, I've realized.
I know. When we were talking about it last time, I said I thought it was three every week, but it's not. It was three at first and then one a week from then. I was fortunate and got an early screener, so I've seen the whole season already, so I'm not saying
anything. Don't come in here and drop that bomb on me.
I'm not seeing anything.
How lucky.
You too?
What? No.
I can't. No, they do. So... whenever you do, like now, especially in the pandemic, and because you can't go places to see a screener, which is how they used to make sure that you don't share it at all. Now, at least the ones I've gotten recently are like, this will explode in 24 hours.
Yep.
Like, as soon as you start watching it, you have a set amount of time before it's deleted forever. And it says your email address, like, all over it in watermarks. And, like, it's like, oh my God, I'm so terrified.
Yeah, no, it does get out. It's your email that's there.
Uh-huh. Oh, 100%.
Must be nice to have been able to sit down and watch all of The Boys, and I'm just here week by week waiting and hoping for more.
I mean, I'm rewatching it, and I'm still waiting and hoping for more. But this is good, because now I have something to binge in the meantime when I can actually watch TV, which is great. So thank you, Jovan.
And really, I really want to reiterate, when it comes to like this show, and I didn't want to just praise it because it's a well-done show, which it is, and there's a lot of well-done shows. For those that are interested in the industry and like other ways to create content, the writing in this show is so unique. In the sense that it tells different stories and changes the protagonist. And it's, I don't know, I think it's a masterclass in its type of writing. So I think it's something to watch and just pay attention to how they do it, because it good.
Yeah.
All right.
Love it. All right, Jovan, let's move on from watching to reading. What are you reading, my friend?
For those of you that don't know, I have the worst eyes in the history of eyes. I am very blind. These glasses are more for look than they are working for me. I have blind spots in my eyes, and so I never got into reading because I read so slowly because I can't see in the middle of my eyes. It's more so on the sides. So if I'm reading, it's so slow because it's all peripheral reading for me. Weird in a nutshell story about my eyes. So never read a lot of books growing up, but because of Audible, not an ad, but should be, I've been listening to so many books through that. And I got addicted to, it was recommended by my wife, actually, R.A. Salvatore's The Legend of Dritz series. Are you serious? They're so good. They're so good.
I've interviewed R.A. Salvatore as well.
God, we can nerd out about this for the next hour.
When he was doing Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, he did all of the lore behind that, and EA somehow got me an interview for my radio show back in Australia, and I was just like, I like Kingdoms of Amalur, that's great, but I want to talk about The Legend of Dritz. I've only read like the first 12 books, and then I dipped out a little bit and haven't got back in until like 3 months ago when I read the first one again, and I'm on Soljourn now. So yeah. I'm like, I'm back, I'm in it again. Yeah.
So what I wound up doing just to kind of pace myself is like on Audible, I was like, all right, I'm going to do one Legend of Dritz book and then do like new Star Wars canon and then back to Dritz, then back to Star Wars canon.
Does that say Homeland and then Exile and then Sojourn?
It does. Are they out of order?
Every time,
or did you read them out of order?
To,
I always need to go to Wikipedia before getting the next book. I'm doing the one in the next story. Because I've actually seen the order out of place on some blogs that are like on top of Google.
Because I should be up to the second book, but that's the third there. Oh, look at Gwenifer. Oh, I love this series. I'm sorry, I'll let you talk about it. But
no, for those watching this, look at her passion. It's that good. And especially
it's
because...
D&D in words. It's a campaign of D&D.
Yeah.
And it's so brilliant. And the way that he writes combat is... I'm seeing a pattern.
So beautifully done.
Okay, can I ask, since you said it's like D&D in books, how does it compare to if either of you have read the Dragonlance novels?
I haven't read it.
I haven't read it, but I know of the books very well because I've had this actual conversation before. And what is explained to me is that R.A. Salvatore does such a good job with lore and action that it really is a smoother version of like a Game of Thrones or the writing of Lord of the Rings, where sometimes they'll just bog you down with so much information that you don't need. Mm-hmm. The way R.A. writes, it's just so fluid that you feel like you really do understand the whole world, and it's not just a glimpse into the lore that they're trying to tell you, if that makes sense.
I mean, you've totally got me sold on it. I want to know for chat if any of you have read Dragonlance, because the way you guys are gushing on about it, I'm like, oh, so it's like Dragonlance. So that's why I'm asking what that comparison is. I have not read these books. You guys being so excited about it definitely makes me want to read these books. But I haven't read the Dragonlance novels since I was a kid, to be fair.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily that it's just like a D&D campaign. Back when the first story of Dritz was written by R.A., it was just because Wizards was like, hey, we want to have backstory on these characters that we can put it into other campaigns that people can like come across these characters. As long as you don't kill them, you can do whatever you want in these short stories. But Dritz became such a popular character that he then went on to do this entire series. And by book 3 or 4, I think that's when the D&D campaign really starts to kick in. Before that, the first book almost was a little slow for me because it just takes place in the world of D&D in the Underdark, and you're only seeing like one wave of characters.
Mezen Baron.
I can't.
It's Mezen Baron Zen, I believe.
See, that's another thing. When you look at it, it's one way, but when you hear it said in the audiobook, it's very different. So my wife loves the books, kept saying it in a funny way, so I kept making fun of her every time she said the name. I was like, no, it's Marin Baron's. I can't now. But it's, I don't know.
There's 30 books in the series? 32.
So you've been missing for a while.
And he released the 32nd this year, and the first one that he wrote the first two and released in the same year, 1990. So this has been happening for the last 30 years. I would have gotten up to around, I think, Sea of Worlds, which is 3, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, book 12, 13, and then I dipped out. But that was 10 years ago, I would have read those.
I'm at book 11 or 12 right now. And it's especially with D&D it's not even a resurgence, but it's just probably at its peak of popularity. If you love the world of D&D and you want to know more about it, read these books because it takes place in the world of D&D. I think the characters right now in the book I'm at, they're going to, what's that? It's like a series of video games also. And I've forgotten. But there's... Baldur's Gate, thank you. Like they're going to Baldur's Gate right now.
Yeah.
So like it takes place in D&D.
Nice. Yeah, chat responded with Zrakin75 says similar to Dragonlance. Varum52 says I read the original Dragonlance series and Salvador Dritz books. I put them on par. So it's pretty on par. So there you go. When you guys are done reading these 33 books, then you can go read Dragonlance.
I checked and I was starting to read book number 3 before book number 2. So I have remedied that.
Good.
I was two chapters in, so it's not the end of the world. But yeah, you're right. It does pick up around 3 and 4 when they get into like the Crystal Shard. Oh, so
yeah.
Good.
Oh, so good.
And Wolfgar and Caddy Bree. I'm so excited about that.
Now, did you, when you were earlier in the story, were you like all about Wolfgar and Caddy Bree? Were you sinking them up? What's it called? Shipping them together? Or are you more like Dritz and Maddie?
Well, I know that Dritz is sweet and blah, blah, blah. But Wolfgar Star and Caddy Brew were better.
They worked. They just worked.
Just worked. They were good together.
And to dwarf,
but not. But it's ah. It's just. Okay. Oh no, her dad. Her dad,
because she's a human who then got adopted by the dad. And then to compare the plane with the reading of this particular episode, next year we're actually getting a full D&D set in Magic the Gathering, which actually technically we obviously don't know anything that's going to be in that set next summer-ish, but it is the D&D world that Dritzed is in. So there's a chance next year we could have some Legend of Dritzed Magic the Gathering cards. So get ready for your Guinevere artifact creature, Dritzed as a elf warrior.
I think it's all great. But what's really interesting is that Wizards of the Coast copped a lot of slack for creating drow and also half orcs who are always sort of like the negative race. Like you don't want to be them. And they're always like, you know, ostracized or not great. So they're trying to be more inclusive with these races. But I really love what the drow race has done with their lore, especially back in the 80s and 90s, like, you know, when it was very heavily male skewed when playing like D&D. They made women, the females in the drow.
They were the strongest ones. They were the alphas.
They were at the top of the food chain. Like the mother, the maidens ran, like the mothers of the houses were like in charge of everything. Their deity was Lolth, the spider god, and she was, you know, a woman as well. And so I kind of loved that. And if you're a man, you were disposable. I liked that and how it was scary, but good.
Yeah, and like you said, at 1990, if you looked at other fantasy novels, they almost looked like romance novels, but just there's a dragon on the cover with some really strong dude with his chest showing and muscles, whereas this was like, let's go the opposite direction.
And they're scary. They are frightening. I really dug that. I thought it was great.
Anytime I hear about someone playing a drow in a campaign, I'm like, does this really work, this story here? Because there's some pretty messed up people. Are you going to play it like that? Are you going to do it?
No, most people want to play the one drow that's good at heart and got away. And
I say that is one in a million people, and that is Dritzed.
There is something from this book series that I was planning on plucking from and putting in this season of Dungeons and Flagons. I just have to figure out.
Very nice.
It's so clever and it's such good storytelling, and it's super D&D-esque. And I think my brother got me onto it because he was playing D&D as well. And he was like, what do you think of these books? And I was like, oh, I love it. Which is weird because I kind of like, you know, romance and, you know, relationships, but this, it doesn't really have too much of that at all. And it's all action. Action.
There's also, if for those who want to kind of combine the worlds, there is D&D one-shots. I know it's a box. It's a Legend of Dritzed, like, adventure in a box. And you can play through a campaign as, like, the different main characters from the Legend of Dritzed series, including as Dritzed. And there's some of the bad guys from the books are actually through the campaign. So it's one of those things where it's like, all right, cool, our first mission. It's literally just D&D that's put together in a box for you. So if you guys can find that on Amazon for, like, $30, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, Lord Rex 69 in chat says, these book covers make me miss Frank Frazetta's work. They're beautiful covers.
I every now and then I'll go on and just start to look at some of the art from the series, and just it's beyond even what I was like thinking of in the first place. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, they were going to make it into a series, but the studio has concerns about how to do a live action drow.
I hope that they don't. There's just some story, like, I'm a huge Mass Effect fan, and I'll be the first one to say that if you try to do Mass Effect, the Shepard story, in a TV series, it might not, it's just not going to work. It's not going to resonate the same way.
And it was Battlestar Galactica with Starbuck, and that's the best version we'll ever get of it.
Yes. And same thing with this, like, sure, we can do Lord of the Rings because that is such a, I don't know, like a, it's still a contained story. There's so much that if you lose from the Legend of Dritzed series, it just changes the characters too much. I wouldn't want to see it. Just read it. Just read the book. Don't watch the show. Just that's how this is supposed to be taken in.
I noticed, I always weigh in on audible narrators. This narrator has very formulaic speech patterns. And if I listen to it for too long, I can predict how his tone runs.
The cadence will go. That it's funny that you mentioned that, because I'll listen while driving, and because it's so formulaic, it's very easy to get lost in the background if you aren't paying attention. He does do a good job, I think, of hitting a lot of different voices. Even his female characters are very high pitched, and he hits that soprano well. But yeah, it is a little, you know, melodic.
Yeah, over and over and over again. So if I can't switch that off and get into the story, then I'll just focus on that the whole time. And it's like being in the movies where it's like, yeah, you can watch the movies, but as soon as someone opens that bag of popcorn and starts eating, and you're like,
oh, it's the candy people. The candy people are way worse than the popcorn bucket people.
Just open it. Yes, I agree with that one. There are more questions, but I think we're going to leave a lot of them for Powered Down. There is a dog at my foot. Oh, my.
There's a Zelda. So, yeah, before we wrap up the official Power Up portion of the show, Jovan Shire, thank you so much for being here. And where can people find you?
YouTube.com/TheJovanShire, Instagram.com/TheJovanShire, Twitter.com/TheJovanShire. We're seeing a theme here. And I can really say that if you liked a lot of stuff that we talked about today, you're going to want to pay attention to kind of what's happening later on in this year. There's major announcements to be coming.
Big deal. And plug your Twitch, dude.
Oh, that's right. Twitch.tv/TheJovanShire. It's my way of like connecting back with just people, and I hark it back to the times of like just hanging out with your friends playing video games. Like, I might not have needed to play Killer Instinct while those two were playing. We were just still hanging out and having a good time. And that's what I try to keep the Twitch atmosphere to be like.
Who's the best in Killer Instinct?
I was all about Cinder. Cinder was my character.
I'm doing Killer Instinct Gold with Orchid.
Orchid was dangerously good. I was never good with her, though. Man, where's that next game?
Oh, yeah. I kind of dipped out on that as well. Anyway, we're going to have a chat in Power Down. Guys, thank you for joining us if you are live for your weekly dose of Power Up. Thank you for also adjusting your schedules for our Thursday live shows. If you've only just kind of like clicking into this and you're like, where's the rest of it? It will be available and uploaded in full in 24 hours time on youtube.com/geekbomb. The questions are, I ask them in Geek Bomb's Discord as well. And to get access to that, you just have to donate to any amount on the Patreon, which I appreciate because Fungens is happening because of that. And that's amazing. But yeah, that's everything. Thank you so much again, Joves.
Awesome. Pleasure to be here.
If you are the Jovan Shire on everything, did someone get Jovan Shire?
Yeah, on Twitter back in 2010, I was Joshua_Evan because I like my middle name, and Joshua Evan felt like a sexy name. And then I got the Jovan Shire nickname, ran with it, tried to get on Twitter, and there's just one guy, one Joshua Ovenshire. It might not be Joshua, just another Ovenshire. And we're very inclusive. Like, there's not a lot of Ovenshires in the United States, so I don't know who this person is. But yeah, I'm not Jovan Shire.
Well, the Jovan Shire sounds very epic.
It does, right? A Jovan Shire. They are not the.
There you go.
That's right. Yeah, Jovan, thank you so much. And also, I just want to take a moment to say thank you to everybody who is here live in chat today. You're amazing. Seb X, thank you so much for the resub. Thank you to everybody who followed. Ace Napster, Quazarin, Joey, SNF, I know if I try to say all those consonants together, I'm gonna muck it up. Ernest Mecca, Tucker Diggs, Stealth Bush, thank you guys. And again, Classy Librarian for the raid to kick us off. So thank you all so much for being here. You're amazing. I appreciate you. And I will be streaming tomorrow. I normally don't stream on Fridays, but I will be streaming here on Twitch tomorrow around 2 p.m. Pacific time. So make sure that you tune in for that. All right, everybody, we're going to go record Power Down, but we'll see you soon. Bye.